And the gospel for today from the gospel according to St. Mark. Jesus went on with his disciples to the village of Caesarea Philippi, and all the way he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they answered him, "John the Baptist," and others, "Elijah," and still others, "one of the prophets." He asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Messiah." And he sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. Then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." This is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now that Maria and I are on the verge of becoming parents, we are doing a lot of reading on how actually to be parents, and particularly to be parents of adopted children. And we're learning all kinds of helpful advice and principles. We're learning about the importance of structure and schedule and routines. We're learning about how to feed them properly and how to discipline them appropriately. And one of the most important principles is that kids need a lot of encouragement. Well, that particular bit of advice is neither novel nor new. We kind of all understand that children need encouragement. Indeed, for over 100 years, we have been telling our children the story of the little engine that could. And you probably know the story, though if you're like me, you did not know that the story actually originated in a sermon preached by one Reverend Charles Wing. So there you go. Who knows what a sermon might offer to the world? But if you know the story, you know it's the story of a little engine that is typically passed over in the line of all the engines that are asked to pull trains. And one day, the station master has a great, huge, long train that has to be pulled up over the very tall mountain, and the station master goes to the various engines and asks them all to do it. "No, no," they say, "too busy, have to do the 903 to Reading, or, have to pull this freight train, can't do this." So finally, the station master comes to the last little tiny engine that's usually used for the easiest of jobs, and he says, "Well, I need you to pull the great long train over the home high mountain." And sure enough, the little engine thinks to itself, "I think I can, I think I can, I think I can," and sure enough, the little engine can and does. And as we all know, the moral of the story is that by dint of sheer hard work and self-encouragement, by believing in oneself, well, virtually anything is possible. "You can do it" has become the mantra of at least the past 3 decades, if not longer. Everyone has told you that you can do it. I mean, this started with your parents, who ran behind you as you surmounted your big boy bicycle, finally free of its encumbering training wheels, shouting at you as they held the seat, "You can do it, go, go, go," finally letting go and letting you ride off into the sunset. Your piano teacher told you you can do it, believing that you would finally master John Thompson's Book Two and play it all the way through Camptown Races without having to go back and start at the first measure. Your college professors told you you can do it, doing everything for you except actually writing your term papers. Now your yoga instructor and your investment banker and your life coach tell you the same thing. You can do it, they say. And all along the way, the Nike shoe company has been yelling at you, just do it. Since 1988, Nike has been encouraging us, you can do it, just do it. So there you are, pedaling away furiously and mastering Camptown Races and graduating at the top of your class and working 80 hours a week to make partner in record time, all because the only thing you know is just do it. And then along comes James and he says, don't bother. Forget it. Just don't even try. Don't do it. Not many of you should be teachers. And most of you, with the possible exception of Blake and Hannah and Jared, are thinking to yourself, okay, I didn't want to be a teacher anyway. I haven't trained for this. This is no big deal. I'm busy being a real estate agent or a research chemist or a rocket scientist, or I'm simply retired. It's not like I've spent a great deal of my life thinking about being a teacher. So not many of us should be teachers. No problem. Fine. Next sermon, please. But of course, my friends, whether you are a real estate agent or a research chemist or a rocket scientist or retired, you are a teacher. When James says that not many of us should be teachers, he uses didaskaloi, meaning sort of garden variety instructors, your run-of-the-mill teachers. Not that any teachers are run-of-the-mill, but you get the gist of it. In church world, ordained ministers do the work of didaskaloi. We are the people that you all send to seminary for 3 or 4 years to learn Greek and Hebrew and Old and New Testament and systematic theology and church history. You do that so that we can come back to you, local congregations, and teach you about the Bible and God and the Pelagian controversy and suffering and justice and evil and grace. But fortunately for the real world, very few of us live in church world, or at least very few of us live there full time. Most of you are not ordained ministers, but all of you are ministers. Whether you want to be or not, you are. All of you are ministers by virtue of your baptism. You became ministers when you got baptized. You became ministers when you made the decision to follow Jesus. You became ministers when you decided that being a Christian was very much about what you did on Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock when you got to your office, and very much about what you did on Friday night when you got out to have fun. And all of that is just as important as what you do on Sunday morning. And that makes you, my friends, didaskaloi. That makes you teachers. Because wherever you work, wherever you drink, wherever you play, you are the recognized Bible teacher. You are the one person in your circle believed to be competent in theology, no matter how much Bible you have or have not read, no matter how often you do or do not pray. You are the teacher. And you teach because God has called you to share in the ministry of all baptized Christians, whatever shape your ministry takes. You teach because as a Christian, you live and work and shop and play in the real world. You live among real life people, some of whom are not Christians. And they are watching you. You may be the only Jesus some people ever encounter. Eric Barreto says that the kinds of teachers that James hopes for rub shoulders with the people, live in the midst of their struggles, sharing their grief and their joys alike. So the teachers that James envisions don't simply stand in front of a classroom and give a stentorian lecture. The teachers James envisions don't even really preach from a pulpit. They teach and they preach in how they live their lives. They preach and they teach by how they interact with young children. They teach and they preach by how they reach out to those who live on the margins of society. They preach and they teach by how they seek to bring out from the shadows those who have lived therein and bring them into God's glorious light. Teachers are those people whom God calls to do God's work of caring for souls in both speech and action. And those are people like you. You teach, as I've suggested, by what you say and what you do not say. Are you outraged by the killings of unarmed black men while in police custody? Well, then perhaps you have insisted that black lives matter. But are you equally outraged by the vicious murder of police officers? Have you been equally insistent then that police lives matter? What do you believe about gay marriage or the Syrian refugee crisis? How do you talk about those issues? Because your teaching and how you think and speak and act around those issues that are very much in today's currency. You teach by how you say things and when you say them. What, for instance, have you said this week about Kim Davis, either in your Twitter feed or in the conversation around the water cooler? What have you said about President Obama or Ted Cruz or whoever happens to be your least favorite politician? Have you criticized them personally, or have you criticized their policy position or their programmatic proposals? It makes all the difference in the world. So those of us who teach by virtue of our calling to the ministry, whether it is the ordained ministry or the ministry of the baptized, are cautioned because the teacher's chief tool of the trade, namely our tongues, are powerful and dangerous instruments. Now, if you don't think that your tongue is a powerful and dangerous instrument, consider the girl who, teased for being fat, develops a self-destructive eating disorder. Consider the boy who, told that he'll never amount to anything, joins a gang and commits increasingly violent crimes to prove that he's a man after all. If you don't think that the tongue is a powerful and dangerous instrument, think of our gay and lesbian friends who cannot believe that they have sacred worth because they have learned that their love is incompatible with Christian teaching. It goes without saying then that our tongues, the chief tool of the teaching trade, our tongues have the capacity to destroy the way a wildfire consumes everything in its path. But, and if I learned anything in seminary, but can be a very powerful theological word, our tongues have another ability. Our tongues possess an opposing ability. Our tongues have a constructive ability. For whether we want to or not, says Barbara Brown Taylor, we construct worlds with speech.